Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Pelo de Borghesis.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com.
I
just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Hey, bus people, bus people, thank you. They have to keep moving because they're so bloody cold. We are getting that snap down here in Florida. Unusual. Mike's not with us tonight. He's feeling under the weather again. Oh, my gosh. His wife took a trip out to Colorado, and she just got back a few days ago and was feeling ill, and they're sharing the sickness like husbands and wives are always, known to do. So he is sick again. He won't be with us tonight. Hopefully he'll be doing better and be back next week and be able to add his bit of wisdom and knowledge to the program. So you're stuck with me by myself this week. Got a few things to talk about, some stuff to share with you here. And as always, it's all about wine. If you want to call me, 646-727-3235. And we do still have our 800 number if you don't want to call in on that, which I think that's New York City. But you can call us on the 800 number, which is, I have no idea. I don't have it in front of me. that doesn't do us any good, does it? I don't know. What did I do with it? Oh, there we are. 866-588-9463. Our 866 588-WINE. So if you want to call on that, you can do so also. I'll see you in the green room and go talk to you for a second. Then we can bring you on air again. We are all about wine. So let's talk about wine and wine-related subjects. And we'll see if we'll keep it on that subject tonight. A couple things. And I just said keep it on that subject, but I'm going to talk about something else to start with here. My daughter said, hey, Dad, you need to really, really get this. It is called a TENS, T-E-N-S, and which actually stands for transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation. or TENS, T-E-N-S. It's a non-invasive, drug-free method for pain management. It's a little machine. My wife ordered one. My engineer ordered one on Amazon, and we got it in a couple of days ago. And I'm having muscle spasms. Well, not spasms, little cramps on my leg. I've been using it last night and a little bit right now, actually. And it really works. It works well. So if you have little small pains, check it out. It's you can get them on Amazon, and they're available at other places. It's a little electrical stimulation of the nerve fibers, and it blocks the pain signal from being carried to your brain. So therefore, your brain doesn't perceive the pain. It also is massages your muscles and stuff. You can feel your muscles twitch in certain areas, but just to pass that on to you, if you're not familiar with that stuff, yeah, check it out. It seems to be working for me, and it might work for you. Not that I'm getting a commission or anything from passing that on. It's just that, hey, you know, if we can help each other with the pain and stuff going through daily life, then you know, I'm all for that. Today is National Artichoke Hearts Day. If you haven't got your artichoke heart for the day, there's still time to make it to the stores and buy yourself a jar of artichoke hearts. And oh geez, what's maybe some Chardonnay, a good oaky Chardonnay might go well with artichoke hearts. A lighter red wine might do it, but artichoke heart day tomorrow, St. Patty's Day. That's Patty, P-A-D-D-Y, not Patty. There is no such thing as St. Patty Day. It's Patty, as in Patrick. And yeah, so don't say St. Patty's Day. The Irish get upset about that. And so it's St. Patty's Day, or St. Patrick's Day. And also, not coincidentally, it is also National Green Beer Day. So that seems to follow on a good day there, since it's St. Patty's Day. Also, you can stop by the winery, Florida State Winery. We have our Key Lime beer, which is green, a nice, pretty green color, fluorescent green, if you will, but nice, pretty green color. That's always good for St. Patrick's Day, too. So, and then Saturday, we got National Sloppy Joe Day. There you go with some. Well, it depends on how much seasoning you're going to put in and all that, but have yourself a light red. Even, I think, my mother-in-law makes sloppy joes all the time, and hers is a little bit lighter. I think a blush wine would go well with hers, but it depends on what you're doing with it. There's a lot of different wines, depends on how you season it. Sunday, it doesn't tell me what day it is on my little chart here, but coming into Monday the 20th is National Ravioli Day. You know, a good ravioli. Raviolis, wait a minute, I'll ask my engineer. Can raviolis be stuffed with anything, or does it have to be cheese? Or she's not sure. I don't know. Maybe anything. But National Ravioli Day, if you don't like cheese or meat or anything, I don't know. I'm not, obviously, not a ravioli expert. So, National Ravioli Day coming up on Monday. Tuesday, National Crunchy Taco Day. Not the soft tacos, but Crunchy Taco Day. National Crunchy Taco Day. It's also first day of spring. Exactly 6 weeks after Groundhog Day, it is the first day of spring. How convenient how that works, that he saw his shadow for six more weeks. It seemed to be true after the old snows up north and along the coast. Now, cold weather we're having here. I mentioned that at the first of the program. And it is cold weather here. We got down to, I went out to the car this morning, or went out to get the paper this morning, and that it was 40 degrees at 7 o'clock this morning, which nasty cold, you know, especially for Florida. We should be out of that by now, so. But it's going to warm up, as it always does in Florida, and we're going to start getting nice weather here reach me soon. So, in fact, they're saying by Saturday and Sunday, it should be in the mid-70s both days. So, it's happening again. So, first day of spring and National Crunchy Taco Day on the 21st. 22nd, World Water Day. And that's, I don't know if there's any wine you can have with World Water Day, but that's happening there. Also, it's International Goof Off Day. So, hey, have yourself a bottle of wine and goof off. That's next Wednesday. Excuse me. I still got a cough hanging on from my cold, but I'll excuse myself every once in a while for that. And then next Thursday, so you can get a jump on it before the program, National Chips and Dip Day. Doesn't say what type of chips, doesn't say what type of dip. So just National Chips and Dip Day, the 23rd week from today, which will be our next program, by the way. So that's the upcoming reasons to drink. You got a day for each one. If there's one that you particularly like, you can do it. I have a request, anyone out there listening, if you have a fantasy baseball team that you do weekly picks, and just, you know, it's usually on Sunday nights or Sunday evenings you pick for the following week through Sunday. Excuse me. All three of us in this house still got our coughs and our sneezes. I don't think we're really sick, but boy, what a pain they are. This Florida coats, the way they hang on, it's miserable. So if you are a fantasy, you know, if you have a fantasy baseball team and you don't mind me joining, let me know on the Facebook page or through the All About Wine email or something. All About Wine email is just allaboutwine101@gmail.com. I'm not real good at the fantasy picks. It's just something I love to do through the summer. I'm not going to do it every day because I just don't have the time and the inclination to do it every day. In fact, sometimes it's even so bad you forget to do it weekly. But if you have a team, you don't mind having another player on it, then email me. And if it's a closed one, let me know your password so I can get into it, and I will become a fellow player. So, any of you out there, and if I get, you know, multiple requests, I'll probably join a couple of them. I will let you know if I do or don't. I'm not going to let you hang in. So, just to let you know, if you have a, excuse me. If you have a fantasy baseball team, weekly picks, let me know if you don't mind someone else joining. Topics this week. Last week, I think it was last week, wasn't it? Yeah, it had to be because we missed the two previous weeks. Or it might have been three, 4 weeks ago. I don't know. But we were talking about GMOs and CRISPR, the new method of doing stuff called CRISPR. And Mike sent me a link. I will try to pop this on our Facebook page at the end of the program here. I was trying to do it beforehand. I clicked the Facebook icon. It took me to the PBS. Now, this is from Nova, the PBS shows that Nova. I love the Nova shows. They're great. But it's a nice article here. It really is a very interesting article here. It talks about the CRISPR, how it works, what it does. It doesn't particularly list pro or con. It lists the facts. It tells you about it. And it's got some nice – oh, thank you. My engineer just brought me wine. I believe this is the Plantation Red from Florida State Winery, is it not? It is. There you go. The article, like I say, goes on both good and bad and indifferent. It lays out the facts. It lets you know what's going on. It has a bunch of comments in there about downy mildew and the strains that are affecting grapevines and all, and that's basically what it is. But it's a very good article. It talks about how CRISPR and CRISPR is a gene editing technique, often compared to a biological word processor. Okay, if the chemicals that make up DNA are the alphabet, those letters in turn spell out the instructions for the particular characteristics of a plant, animal, or any other organism. All right, you know the DNA is spiral. Gene editing allows for precise editing to delete or add or replace a specific part of the DNA letters, which can then change the physical characteristics of it. The technique to shut off the genes that make Chardonnay vulnerable to downy mildew, which will make the plant hardier against the disease. So the variety is called Dijon Chardonnay 76, which has been edited from NJ76. Sorry, actually NJ stands for New Jersey. This where this this doctor is doing this works in New Jersey. So, but it's Dijon Chardonnay 76, and so that's what actually happens with CRISPR is they interact with the host, and so that downy mildew as a fungus can be stopped within it. The fate for CRISPR in agriculture is really uncertain. It just depends on whether scientists can pull off the technological feats and possibilities of getting it to be done, and also how the public's going to accept it ultimately. I mean, that's really part of it. We're seeing a lot on the DNA now. CRISPR, yeah, you know, they're saying it's not the same as GMO. And, you know, gene editing isn't new. It's been around for a long time, and in the last 5 years or so, it's gotten a bunch of fancy names and stuff and different, you know, switching around. But CRISPR is like a modern word processor, and those older DNA things and different manipulations, all that, they compare it to doing a document on a Commodore 64. And I'm sure you all remember those. This is an interesting article. It's rather long. I was reading through it, and I found, wow. And instead of going through it and rereading it to you, if you're really interested, I will put this onto the Facebook page, the All About Wine Facebook page. Again, just, you know, Facebook/All About Wine. And it will, you can read it yourself and look at what it says and all that. But interesting article, very interesting article. CRISPR trying to, well, this one scientist here is trying to get Chardonnay so that it is resistant to downy mildew. And that's what the purpose of this one. And downy mildew is a problem. So if they can get something that can control downy mildew or make the plant resistant to it, then we can all say yay. It won't change the taste or the flavors of the grape or anything. But editing out pesticides is the name of the article, and I'll get it transferred over after the show. So something to check out yourself. Other things here. I've got other things to talk about for a while here. Oh, excuse me. Let me take a sip of my wine. I like my red. I say humbly. Wines that you can't find anywhere else. A little quick comments on some of these things here. I saw this article. It said that when you walk into restaurants, nice restaurants and all that, they'll bring their table wine over. In fact, I was just out last night to Olive Garden. and had relatives in town, and we went up to Olive Garden, had a bottle of wine. They came over to the table and they poured us a Pinot Noir, and I looked at the bottle, and it was a common one. It was one that people are familiar with and all that, but there are a lot of restaurants and a lot of chains, particularly because they're big enough they can do it, are making their own wine. Making their own wine. That way they have their own label, they have their own private label, they have their own wine, and it is just for them. You can order it from them but you're not going to find it anywhere else. It's the only place you're going to get it is right there. And so it's happening more and more. They're commissioning wineries to make a wine for them, and you can't get it anywhere. So when you go out to restaurants and different things like this, you find wines that you've never heard of or that has been served with your meal, and you're just discovered it. Ask them, because sometimes it might be their own personal vintage, their own personal label, and it really is happening more and more in the bigger restaurants around. The Swan Valley in Australia flooded a couple months ago. And it was some serious flooding down there. There were some areas that were really underwater too long. They are in the middle of their growing season, too. And so, I shouldn't say middle, toward the end of their growing season, which is a horrible time to get a disaster like this. And they got some of the banks in the... the Swan Valley, the Swan River runs through it, and it flooded a lot of the low-lying vineyards. And they've saying that some of the properties were as much as 10 feet underwater. The Chenin Blanc had a lot of the grapes were split open. Botrytis and mold then set in from the human conditions that followed because of it. And botrytis, if you think about it, can be a good thing, but it's not on a situation like this. It is something that is not good for your grapes when you start getting botrytis spreading around the vineyard. And it could also impact future vintages if it's still running rampant in the vineyard and making it for a wet vineyard. So the Swan Valley is... areas above the waterline are also susceptible to the disease, and the few wineries that have been severely affected by the flooding after 140 millimeters of rain, it has put the whole area at a loss for grapes and all that. So Swan Valley, Swan Valley, Australia, a big problem with the rains they had there a few weeks ago. Let's see, is that the... No, yeah, this is the one I wanted to talk about, too. Can we taste terroir? If you're familiar with terroir is the influence of the soil, the weather, everything on the grapes, on the growing of the grapes. And then when it goes into the winery, the winemaker then works with the terroir to make it the best wine possible. Terroir is a word from France. There is no English equivalent to that word. Basically, everyone knows what it means and all that. So, but terroir. Scientists in Italy have tested the notion that the wines from different regions can be distinguished simply by the aroma. And they're saying, yes, they can. Experienced wine people are saying, yeah, well, this isn't news. This has been around for a long time. the novices who are tasting it and testing it are saying, yes, you're starting to be able to see it. It's really more noticeable than what people expected. The smell of terror is different than the wines and the grapes. Now, different grapes will give you a different smell, and as will different terror. So the aroma to the nose is, you know, subject to different things. But they did 96 pairs of Merlots and Cabernets from two relatively obscure regions in Italy. And they find that it was the panel of experts and the panel of novices that found that there is a distinct difference in the aroma from the different terroir. And it's not just because of the grape, because most of them were Merlots and Cabernets, but it was actually the terroir. So you can tell the difference between terroir. It's not something that is just, you know, talked about, and it's in the wine. And it doesn't take an expert nose to understand that either. They, again, had 20 novices. It was 12 professional wine professionals and 20 novices that did the blind sniff test, they called it. And professionals fared no better than the novices about actually picking up the smell of terroir and of the varietals. So it is something that's very real in the aroma there on terroir. You know, we talk about terroir a lot when we talk about wine, and we talk to different wineries over the years, and every one of them have made comments about, oh, our terroir is just like France and all that. And that seems to be the comparison, except for that one winery. I can't remember which one it was, but it said, you know, why can't France say, oh, this is just like Kentucky or whatever? Yeah. I thought that was funny. But terroir can be smelled, and it's there. It's definitely there. All right, nothing there. Let me go back to this one here. Red blotch. Okay, there's that one there. Red blotch is like phylloxera. We've talked about phylloxera. Phylloxera is the root lice that has gotten into the grapes in California. Around the world, actually. I say California, around the world. Individual, let's see, who is this? Bruce Cakebread of Napa's Cakebread Cellars. And you've all seen Cakebread Cellars. It's on almost every shelf. He's saying that the drought conditions are going to affect the wine styles that are in California. And he said, now, the rains we've had out in California are going to help, but it's not a cure. And, just one season, a bunch of rain, doesn't mean that it's the drought's over. During the 1980s, a new type of phylloxera started to attack vines in California, and they were replanted in a new rootstock. And by the 1990s, about half of the total area of the vineyards had been destroyed. And it was discovered red blotch was the culprit in 2008. It was found the virus in Cabernet Sauvignon vines and also in experimental vines in Napa. Bruce Cakebridge said that the treatment for the virus, which, as the name suggests, causes the leaves to develop red blotches, and it's also affects the ability of the grapevines to photosynthesize. So it can cause sugar levels to drop by 6 degrees Brix while reducing yield. And particularly in red grapes, it also affects the color and tannin levels. So red blotch is a serious little problem. It's a virus, and they say stressing the concerning stress is one of the problems on the grapevines. And he said that disease vines were being used to help the new plantings, but that has been a mistake because it's been spreading. The problem needs to be looked at because of the increasingly dry conditions that they've been having around California that helps spread it a little bit. Maybe these rains might be a forebearer of good times in California, but who knows? It's a big rainstorm or a big rainy season doesn't mean that the drought is done. It's, it took them 5-6 years to get that drought that serious, and one good soaking doesn't really do it. And the one good soaking in a lot of areas just ran off. It wasn't a type of rain that soaks into the ground. You need a little small drizzly rain for like 5 days to really do the best job. Same thing with watering your lawn. You don't go out and you turn the hose on one area and just let it run there for an hour and then walk away and say, okay, I watered the lawn. You spray the whole thing with a little bit of water, and that really takes care of it. So red blotch, I'll try to keep you informed of what's going on with red blotch and what's happening with that. Something else I want to tell you about. Now, I'm not soliciting this. This guy is trying to get a Kickstarter program. And so, if you're going to put money in Kickstarter, give money to me so I can get myself a decent computer for these programs, because I'm working off my desktop. So don't give it to this. But this is a Kickstarter program for a wine glass mask, which is basically a gas mask for wine. It's a glass fits over your mouth and your bridge of your nose, and actually seals it around the bridge of your nose and over your mouth and all that, so that as you're sipping the wine, as you hold the wine up to your nose, it's right there at your mouth, and it gives a seal around everything. It's molded glass. They call it the glass glass glass. I keep adding the K to that. Mask, mask. They have a picture of it here, and there's a video on here. I'm not going to punch it because they start talking. They'll talk over me. But the design was made by a James Pyatt, and he's now attempting a Kickstart program for his thing. He says it is part function and part novelty. The glass conforms to your face and utilizes the Venturi effect to amplify the aroma of the wine. Red wines breathe wine molecules combined with nitrogen and oxygen in the air. The Venturi nozzles on the front of the glass, the wine glass mask, reduce the flow of oxygen and nitrogen and increases the velocity entering the wine aroma mixing chamber as you breathe in. The added air speed lifts more wine vapors off the surface, enriching the aroma and flavor. So I guess there's more to this mask than just what it shows in the picture here. I don't know. Well, I have had wine glasses for years, different ones and all that, and some work well and some don't. But then you always think, well, maybe it's the wine itself that's not working well. And so, yeah, I don't know. But the glass mask, he's pledged a goal of $78,000 so that he can get this off the ground. So far, he's gotten $366, not thousand, $366. So if you're interested in giving this man some of your money so he can make a wine mask, then just email me. I'll send you that thing. One comment here, and I haven't listened to the video. It says, product is cool. The voice in the video is annoying. If you're, again, interested in knowing more about it, give me, drop me a line on Facebook or email or whatever, and we will, I will send you information on this, the wine mask. Or you can just look it up. I think it's probably winemask.com or something like that, too. So let me get out of this. Let me go to the next thing I was going to talk about here. Okay. That's right. Oh, here we go. Let's see. You know, I could probably be playing the Jeopardy theme about now. Ratings numbers. Rating wine. This, I saw this, and I read this, and I'm going, oh, I don't know. But let me share this with you. Share this with you simply because you can form your own opinion. This is a little blog put in the Hour Press in Detroit, the Detroit Hour. Wilfred Wong is a wine expert, from what I understand on this. Says Wilfred Wong says that he tastes more than 8,000 wines a year. You walk into a wine store and a little shelf tag on Chardonnay screams that got a 90 from Wine Spectator or Robert Palmer. And he said, what does that 90 mean? The information accompanying the number, lush, unctuous, ripe fruit with a light touch of vanilla may give you a hint of the wine's flavor, but how does that account for a score of 90? Or the criteria, he says, so this, in this picture, he comes up with the smartest, most knowledgeable, and experienced people in the wine business in the country, who he says is Wilfred Wong, who has put into words what the range of numbers mean. Full disclosure, Wilfred Wong is a longtime friend and fellow wine judge of this author of this article, who lives and works in San Francisco his entire life. He owns a fine food store. He's judged wine competitions for years. He was a chef buyer. He has a chain of markets that have around 150 stores in California, Arizona, and Washington. And in 2014, he moved from BevMo to an equivalent position. Wine.com to an equivalent position at BevMo. And he calls himself a wine guru. So here is his scale, giving the description of each one. Now, I won't make a comment on these. I'll let you decide for yourself what you think about this. 70 to 79. Clean and noxious and really simple wines and super premium wines with very low key aromas and flavors. Usually confined to jug wines. And he's got jug in quotes there. And often seen from areas outside of the major global growing regions. Often from areas that have never sold their wine internationally. 80 to 84. Clean, simple, boring wines. Commercial, like canned soup. 85 to 89. Very commercial to pretty fine. This is the place where most of the nationally traded wines end up. I also put wines in the 88 to 89 point range when they are over-oaked and contain too much sugar. Fancy stuff that just missed the grade. 90 to 94. There are plenty of 90-point wines that are fat, rich, and big. They are often made in a production line way, but with close to top-grade grapes. But this also includes the delicate yet complex wines that are not huge, but balanced and layered. When I venture to 91 to 94 area, I find the wines pretty special. And then 95 to 100 world-class wines, typically in excellent vintages. Often single vineyard bottlings. In many cases, I will prefer the winery's single vineyard bottling to the reserve offerings. And that's what he has to say about the scoring. If more wines were judged using these kinds of target points, we'd be more likely to see consistency in the scoring of what's in the bottle. The problem has been that one writer's scores of 90 may be another 70. There is a wide variation, especially in some of the big wine magazines. So it's just a matter of long-term understanding of your magazine and what you find and what you like in there. I think he's somewhat of a of a wine snob. No, I think he is a lot of a wine snob just in his approach and what he was saying and all that. Just because you've tasted 8,000 wines a year doesn't mean that your scoring system is any better than anyone else's. Yes, we do need a consistency. I will not argue with that point. But, you know, most people, wines that they get are used in the 80 to 89 range anyway. And to call them commercial, like canned soup, is, I think, a slap in the face to a lot of people's wines that they buy and enjoy. If they enjoy them, that's fine. And, you know, his wording to me is a little bit out of range. Not everybody can pick up $95 to $100 score wines in the world class range and excellent vintages and enjoy them. So I think a lot of times the Robert Parkers and all these other wine scorers out there are taking note of the people who are going to be drinking these wines and who can afford to buy them, and they're based on that. And with this type of rating on these lower scored wines here, I think people will say, like they do quite often, oh, well, I don't know anything about it. I know what I like, and I just like the bad wines. They're not bad. There's nothing wrong with those. So, I said I was going to comment, and I did anyway because I couldn't help myself. when people write some stuff like that, I just can't help but have to make comments on it. Uncorking. Oh, okay. 7. Wait a minute, that's not what I want. Well, where is that? It should be in this one here. It should be in this set here. Oh, it's in the blog also. It's off. Someone's being written about. Well, I guess I was wrong. Again, I tend to think that he can be somewhat of a snob in those approaches. First red wine. This caught my eye here, and I just want to pass this on. The history of wine. The history of wine in Morocco. The article says that the first red wine that has came out in Morocco back in the Phoenician times. North African nation is producing wines in the foothills of along the coast of the Atlas Mountains. And they have been doing so for centuries. Historical cradle of wine, if you will, the beginning of wine productions and winemaking. And they said that few people have experienced Moroccan wines because, well, like just about everywhere, they don't make enough to sell anywhere else except right there. But the vine set at about 2,300 feet above sea level, which gives it a cooler climate and different flavors and tastes than what you would find on the coast. It is 100% Syrah in that area, and some of the areas around there also are coming up with Chenin Blanc, Sauvignon Blanc, Semillon, and Chardonnay. So, but red wines are very unique for that area, and they think that is the cradle of the red wine. So, the Moroccan Atlas Mountain region is what they're saying is the cradle of red wine. If you get a Moroccan wine, try it. Wine in a can, sales are jumping through the roof. 125% increase over last year wine in a can. It has went from $6.4 million in sales last year to $14.5 million in sales this year. 125% increase. The wine dollars sold by soared by 170%. They are taking on. People are finding it as convenient. They're finding it as easy to carry, easy to use, easy to take around with you. Don't have the problems with bottles recycling. It's the thing that you can actually take to the beach with you, and people aren't going to say, "Oh, he's got a bottle on the beach." You know, it's a can, and you know you can get by with that probably a lot more so than anything else. It's many different wineries are coming up with it. Colorado's Infinite Monkey Therium is one of the ones that you can find in cans, along with Alloy Wine Works, Backpack Wine, Barefoot Wine, The Drop, Fiction, Flip Flop, Lila Wines, Origin, Ruza, Seven Daughters, Underwood, and Westwood Wines, just to name a few. All of them are available in a can. So I haven't had a wine in a can yet. And, you know, I was at the store the other day, and I was looking at the ones in the can, and I just didn't pick up one. I just, for no particular reason, because I'm not adverse to trying different things. But they are there. They're all over the place. So wine in the can. They're selling well, and it's the same stuff you buy in a bottle, and they've got the liner on the can now so that it doesn't affect taste at all. It is very, very basic coating on the can, which, you know, you won't affect the taste or anything else. So it's we're going to see more and more of it, I guarantee you. Climate change. This is, once it pops up here, the wine industry is changing because of climate change. Again, I've said this before, whether you, what type of reason you think the climate is changing, it is changing. It's getting, look at the weird weather we're having all over, and that's attributed to the climate change. But the Northwest area, the Pacific Northwest, the climate change is meaning that's changing industry up there. The Willamette Valley. Oh, no, I'm not. Jeez. Boy, that one clicked up on me, and I didn't even see that happen. With the climate change that's coming, a changing industry. The grapes are being shifted to different areas. They're being different grapes are being used. Dr. Greg Jones from the Southern Oregon University, which was a guest in my program, one of my favorite guests, said the plants are telling the secrets. They're getting earlier harvests, earlier bud break, and earlier bloom. And, you know, I mean, that's when you start doing that, it's not something that's just because. It's because the grapes are finding that, you know, the climate is going to do it. He said the plants are telling us their secrets. So getting pretty warm to the point that it's very difficult to have consistent productivity. And it's changing all the time, all over the country, but this is, you know, the Pacific Northwest. Dr. Scott Burns, a geologist and wine expert, said they're seeing it, and they're battling the climate change. They're making money, and they're making great wines. This is in Napa all the way up through Oregon and Washington. So they're being able to handle it. The climate change has not affected flavors and taste and all that yet. I think it's going to eventually. I think they're going to have to do something to change what they're doing. And the areas where it's going to be warmer, longer, where it's going to not be as cool at night as they want. Oh, geez. This thing is horrible. This is just keeps popping up different things on this. So, yeah, because this is a TV website out of Washington. Is it Washington? Yeah. Climate change is going to take effect. Every time I talk about climate change, I say the same thing. We will continue to talk about it. I will continue to tell you about it, things that I find and all that. But it is a lawyer has a flag on this site. Kava cells are fizzling in Japan, by the way. I just wanted to throw that at you without telling you the whole thing. Kava is your Spanish sparkling wine. It's flying off the shelves in Japan, but all of a sudden it just stopped. It's not getting the sales that it used to. Not sure why, not sure what's causing it, but it's not happening like it used to. Now this is done. All right, there we go. Another one here. Wait a minute. That's Michigan is restricting wine shipments again. Just when we thought it was getting better, Michigan is restricting it again. Different rules and regulations. The legislature is going. Michigan has bounced around on this two or three times. Michigan law passed last month lets retailers inside the state buy a specifically designated merchant license that will allow them to ship wines to in-state consumers. The benefit of the law, which actually takes effect just any time now, is that it will make it easier for wineries and in-state retailers to ship to Michigan's consumers. What is that now? What are we coming? What is this? This is this one here? Read more if that's what I want. Well, I don't know where that's coming from. So why don't we just click out of this completely, and that will probably stop it. But there's some people in Michigan and Indiana that are suing to stop and change these laws. They said it's just it's becoming restrictive again. It's ridiculous. It's bouncing back and forth. Nobody knows what to do with it. I don't know if Free the Grapes is involved with it or not, but that's something else that is always checking on that. FreeTheGrapes.org. And by the way, if you are not familiar with that website, it's a great website. Its purpose is to get shipping available throughout the country, and they're doing a great job, but obviously things like Michigan is putting a bind in it. Wine closures, the facts. Okay. Articles over multiple pages. I'm not going to go on to this. What I can do is I can put a link to this on the Facebook page also. It's like 10 pages long. It says stoppers do affect the way the wine can taste, as well as producer's cost and carbon footprint. So with that in mind, the article decided to look at the key differences between closures types from three materials: cork, plastic, and aluminum. The idea is not to say which is best, but to look at the facts after many years of reporting on these closures. So it's an interesting article, but it's, like I say, 10 pages long, and I'm not going to go through all this with you. So I will get you a link on this. It's from the Drinks Business, online drinks business, and it's from the 27th of February. So this is a rather new article here, a couple, 3 weeks old. So I will get this on our Facebook page. You can look through this, but it is worth a read. It's got a lot of interesting stuff. Again, they're not saying this is better, that's better, this is better, that's better. They do try to lay out everything for you and tell you this is what's working. I've always said, though, myself, you know, any type of closure is going to work because you're going to be drinking that wine before you have to worry about it. You shouldn't be aging the wines. You should be drinking them. Most of the wines that people are buying are not being to be aged or made to be drank. So drink them. And the type of closures that you're using are not going to make a big difference. So always keep that in mind. I think I'm going to close it for the night. I'll try to get these two links on there that I told you. I was going to put them on Facebook for you. The one about CRISPR, which I highly recommend you read through that. That is coming up as a thing of the future. It really is. It's not DNA manipulation, but you know, it's it almost really is, but they swear it isn't. So I don't know, but CRISPR, I'll get that on there. And then this one about the corks, drink business article about closures. I shouldn't say corks. I should say closures, because it's not corks, it's closures. And check those out. Reminder, if you are part of a fantasy baseball team, a weekly challenge, let me know. I will be more than happy to become a player with you. But if not, that's okay. We'll see you next week on All About Wine. Be careful out there tomorrow evening, St. Paddy's Day. Be careful with your driving and your drinking. It's a Friday night for St. Paddy's Day, and that's going to really cause more problems. So, you know, drink at home or find yourself a designated driver and use your designated driver. And don't be getting in the car with people who have been drinking. Please, please use some sense on that. If someone's been drinking, then call a cab, call Uber, call, you know, any of those. They're all out there. And a lot of times, too, AAA in different areas will have programs where if you call them, they'll come and tow your car home if you're drunk and not charge you an outrageous amount. So anything to keep the roads safe for you and for everyone else. So be safe out there on the road. Be careful on the road on St. Paddy's Day when you're drinking. And enjoy some wine for me. And we will look forward to talking to you next week. And have yourself a wonderful week. And, yeah, drink wine. Thanks for listening to us.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@flune.com. That's corp@flewn.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.